Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me today on Next Level Healing. Today's guest is the one, the only, the incomparable Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. Dr. Jill's TED Talk was the first to ever go viral, seen by 29 million people around the planet. She is a Harvard-trained and published neuroscientist who had a stroke, and what she learned about that and the compartments of the brain and how they interact together is life-changing. You're going to love today's interview. Welcome to Next Level Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Tara Perry. For 25 years, I've helped professionals, first responders, celebrities, Olympians, teachers, moms, dads, and people just like you achieve their results better and faster than they thought possible. This is where measurable modern science meets the quantum. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive right in. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Next Level Healing. I am beyond excited at my guest today. We are joined today by Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, a Harvard-trained and published neuroscientist. In 1996, you may know from her famous TED Talk, she experienced a severe hemorrhagic stroke in the left hemisphere of her brain, causing her to lose the ability to walk, talk, read, write, or even recall any of her life. Her memoir, My Stroke of Insight, documenting her experience with her stroke and the 8-year recovery, spent 63 weeks on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list and is still routinely the number one book in the category of stroke in the Amazon marketplace. In 2008, Dr. Jill gave the first TED Talk that ever went viral on the internet, which now has well over 29 million views. In 2008, Dr. Jill was chosen Time Magazine's one of the most 100 influential people in the world and was the premier guest on Oprah Winfrey's Soul Series webcast. Her new book, Whole Brain Living, The Anatomy of Choice and the Four Characters That Drive Our Life, is a number one release on Amazon in the categories ranging from neuroscience and to nervous system diseases and stroke. And thank God it's available on Audible as well. And Dr. Jill reads it herself, which I love because I love hearing the essence of the author coming through. Welcome to Next Level Healing, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
Thank you. I am so happy to be with you. I think we resonate on a lot of different levels.
So
I know
many
we're
going
to have a very interesting conversation.
Well, I am jumping out of my skin because my delicious spot of being on the planet is helping people connect to their subconscious mind and make peace with all these things that were at war. And boy, did you just open up for me where anatomically those are existing in the brain. And I've had such a great time informing other people of your book and encouraging them to go get Whole Brain Living to understand these characters, because we tend to blame and shame so much of ourselves for our own thoughts and reactions to our world. And I always tell people, look, it's not your fault. You weren't born with a manual to your brain. And these patterns that have been firing and wiring usually your whole life, you know, they're just going on subconsciously and you just don't know it. So if you would just explain briefly for our audience, you know, what happened to you and this state that you appeared in, because one of the delicious things that I love sharing with people is, hey, guess what you're like when you wipe out your left hemisphere? And they all look at me like, what? So I'm going to let you explore the punchline to that, because it's a real eye opener when you realize, wow, without this, I am this.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. So I'm a neuroanatomist by training, and my fascination has always been, how does our brain create our perception of reality? And that's because I have a brother diagnosed with schizophrenia, so our two perceptions of reality were very different, and it made no sense to me, even though we had the exact same experience. So I became fascinated with the brain, and I love cells, and I love dissection, and I love teaching about the beauty of cells and the body and all that. So I was teaching and performing research at Harvard Medical School, teaching gross anatomy, body anatomy, as well as neuroanatomy, the anatomy of the brain, when I woke up one day and this major hemorrhage began to trickle into my left hemisphere. And over the course of 4 hours, I got to watch through the eyes of a neuroscientist, a neuroanatomist, circuit by circuit go offline. And it was fascinating for me because that's what I was teaching. I mean, I have a visual map of the way different pieces of information get processed at the level of the brain. And I actually got to witness each of these circuits now swimming in a pool of blood and becoming non-functional. It took 4 hours for me to get help. And, you know, the TED Talk is the best place to go to get all the details of that experience. But I, to be able to witness this, everything I had learned in books, and, you know, I had studied the differences between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere, but all that information is very circuit by circuit. It's very function by function. And what I lost was the character profile of my left thinking brain, which is rational and organized, and what we all think of as our conscious brain. Well, that part of my brain went offline, as did the left emotional tissue, which is all the pain from my past and all my projection into the future. So the left hemisphere experiences this linearity across time. And me, the individual, there's actually a group of cells in there that define the boundaries of where I begin, where I end. It has language. It knows my name. It knows my likes and my dislikes. And when all that went offline, what I gained was not just an understanding of what's going on in the right hemisphere when it is untethered of this unconscious mind, as we would refer to this part of our brain, but I gained what, for me, it's, what did I lose? I lost linearity across time. So I didn't have a past. I didn't have a future, but I didn't have a me either. I didn't have a Jill Bolte Taylor. She became non-existent. She died that day.
And what was that feeling like?
Oh, it was delightful. So because in the absence of boundary, there is all full expansiveness. And in the absence of me, the individual, I became a part of the consciousness of the collective whole. And to realize we're wired for this consciousness, it is the consciousness of our right hemisphere. So our unconscious or subconscious in the right hemisphere is the emotions of the present moment, the experiential action of the present moment, as well as this higher cognitive knowingness of the right thinking tissue of our right hemisphere. So it was delightful. And this, you know, all fear goes away because you have to have these cells to generate fear. And when the cells that generate fear go offline, they go offline. Just like the cells that define the boundaries of where I begin go offline, I'm now open and expansive. And when you're in the present moment, actually perceiving the information streaming in about the present moment, I become a big energy ball, literally as big as the universe. So and the beauty of learning this, of course, is to know that we're all wired for this blissful euphoria right there in the brain circuitry of our right hemispheres.
I'm so grateful to have you here describing this because whether it's through prayer or meditation or fasting or an accident, we've interviewed a number of people who have had near-death experiences. This knowingness of being one with everything.
Hey guys, studies are showing that 68% of people that watch podcasts regularly don't click the subscribe button. Do me a huge favor. If you like this content, click subscribe so other people know where to go for the cool stuff. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more, just the deliciousness of that experience and how it truly changes your outlook on life forever after.
The two hemispheres value completely different things. If I am an individual and I have hierarchy, I have linearity, and then if you turn that vertical, it becomes hierarchy. And we function in a very hierarchical society. We have a president for government all the way down to the people and everybody in between. In our academic school system, we have the superintendent and the board of directors and everybody in between all the way down to the children. And so we function in a value structure that is hierarchical, and we have me, the individual. And as soon as I, the individual, that group of cells comes online, then I'm the center of my universe. You're the center of your universe. What do you care about? You care about how things influence you and influence the people that you love. But when you get rid of me, the individual, then we become a part of the conscious of the collective whole, which means I actually, my value structure is about us as humanity, us as a species in relationship to this beautiful planet, and this interdependence, this interrelationship that is very real. And if that's the perception, then there's this incredible openness and acceptance of what is, because what is, and I'm not placing a judgment of right, wrong, good, bad. How does it relate to me? I want more. And in the absence of that, there's just this going, living in the flow, really, because then everything is fluid. We are fluid, existing in the fluidity of an electromagnetic radiation of which we are in. It is in us. We're in this fluidity. And when you come into life as a human with that as your value structure, you make very different decisions than if you come into life as me, the individual, and where am I? What is mine? Who is my tribe? What do we have in common? As opposed to my curiosity of allow me to go explore things that are not familiar because there's the absence of fear.
How long were you in that state of not having an identity, not knowing where you started and the rest of the world, where you stopped and the rest of the world started, and just being an awareness you, what was it like? What was the time period? And I imagine time didn't exist for you in that state.
Well, it was 8 years.
8 years.
It was 8 years. Yeah. It was 8 years before I would describe myself as a solid. I existed as a fluid.
Oh my goodness.
But that did not mean that circuits in the left hemisphere were not coming online, because they were skill sets. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I lost all these circuits. And the circuits are skill sets. But one of the skill sets is my ability to perceive that my skin begins and ends here, and this nose is of me, but these glasses are not of me. So I could learn those things, but my experience of myself in relationship to everything lasted for 8 years. And it was a sharp moment when I realized I was a solid. And that was when I decided I was completely recovered.
So when you're living in that sort of bliss state of, I would call it Ananda, not knowing where you stop and the rest of the world starts, where do you get the motivation to succeed? Because if you're not an individual that has a goal that's worthy of going after, who helped you walk through this process?
Well, it's different to say, although I was not an individual, I still had motivation and I still had impetus toward something. But my impetus toward was for humanity, not for me, the individual. So I wasn't regaining my abilities simply for me to rebuild the construct of my left hemisphere so I could be an individual and go back to being what I was, because that was actually the last thing that I wanted. I wanted to recover as little as possible for people in our society to view me enough like them that they would listen to what I had to share. And in our society, if we don't have language, we're pretty much on the sideline of our humanity. So I had to regain language. And my mother, Gigi Taylor, my mother, she reared me twice. This girl, she just brought me back and she set me up for success. And she was a college level mathematician. She loved analytical geometry and calculus. And I mean, to her, that was delicious. And to me, it was like, I didn't even know what a one was for 4 years after the stroke. I mean, it was like, oh, so sorry, mama. But she set me up for success. But the goal for me was if we as a society understood that we are wired for peace right there in our own right hemisphere. If we knew that and we trained ourselves to access that more often, then we would live more peaceful lives. We would project peace into the world and the world would become a more peaceful place. So that was my motivation. So it wasn't that the motivation was gone. It was the, what was the point of the motivation? And it wasn't about me, because I was the life I had before. I was, you know, a golden girl, a rising star at Harvard and in the Harvard Medical School, doing what I was doing and my research and all that. And it was like, boom, that's gone. So that'll never come back. And I truly believed that that would never come back. But once I realized I could redo that, it was like, that's not my calling anymore.
Yeah, explain, because, again, we've had people on the show before. One, Karen Johnson, she was a federal judge. And then when her son ended up ODing, she left all that because she felt a much stronger calling. So please describe for us the experience of being at the top of your game, but not having the sense of satisfaction perhaps that you do now when you experience this shift in beingness and wanting to put that out to the world. And obviously the world is hungry for this, because otherwise there wouldn't be, you know, more than 29 million views of your TED Talk.
I don't know what it's like to be inside of another human, because I'm not there. I'm only inside of my humanness. And meaning and purpose stem from the right hemisphere. I can make all the money in the world. I can rise to the top of whatever I'm going to rise to the top of. But in that mindset of hierarchy and linearity, there's always the next step up, right? There's always, I want more, I want more, I want more. And in the left hemisphere, even if I'm just in my left hemisphere, if I'm driven by my analytical thinking mind, then my relationships are probably suffering. I mean, what is a relationship, right? It's usually not that analytical thinking relationship, except I'm sure that there are some of those that work. But a lot of that drive toward more is driven by the emotion of the left hemisphere of I need more, I need more, I need more, because my self-image, my identity, that group of cells measures itself against your group of cells based on external material things.
Well, in that kind power. Of world, isn't a relationship more like a negotiation? Like, you know, yes, I give you this and you give me this. And so we've got a business transaction more than just I love you to the moon and back.
Right. Exactly. And that has its purpose. But most of the individuals who are driven simply without a meaning, if there's no meaning to why am I doing it other than material, is this, you know, is that all there is, my friend? Then let's keep dancing. I mean, really. So meaning comes into how do I use myself as this magnificent biological creature of human life? How do I take what I am and use me in a way that serves other people in a positive way, serves humanity overall, serves the planet, our relationship with the planet, because without the planet, mental health doesn't even matter. And, you know, that's that kind of big picture perspective of myself in relationship to everything is at the core and is the value of the right hemisphere. So, you know, there's a wonderful book you probably are familiar with, The Master and His Emissary.
I'm not.
About the master. Oh, Ian McGilchrist. He's a wonderful British psychiatrist. And he wrote this book. And the master is the right hemisphere. Mm. And his emissary is the skill set and the tools of the left hemisphere in order to manifest in the world the goals and the meaning of the right hemisphere, which is of the collective whole. So there's just two very different ways of looking at life and our relationship to ourselves and how do we find meaning. And I'm one of these people that if I don't have meaning in my life, why am I here, mm-hmm. right? I'm just taking up a bunch of space, you know, and I'm on the edge somewhere, go jump off. I mean, because for me, I have to have meaning. And it's like, as long as there is a reason for me to continue as a biological creature in service to that which is around me, to those who are around me, and the overall times that we are in, oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just my job to sit out on my boat in a cove for 3 months and send love into the universe because it needs it.
Beautiful.
And I'm just trying to help create some balance.
Yeah. So, Jill, I know that a hemorrhagic stroke is a more rare kind of stroke. How unusual is it that it takes that many years? I mean, what did you do to facilitate your recovery when you were working with your beloved mom, Gigi? What was she doing to help you? I mean, I almost want to say, did love heal you? Because her attention to your development in that time must have been just absolutely pivotal.
You know, it's interesting because in the beginning, Gigi came in and she had been told that, I was 37 at the time. I was in Boston. She was in Indiana. My boss called her and said, sit down. We got to talk. And they asked Gigi to come for long term. And so Gigi arrives on the third day, and I didn't know what a Gigi was, much less, I didn't know what a mother was, much less my own. All I knew was Gigi was this energy ball, but everybody was excited that Gigi's coming to town. So I was truly an infant in a woman's body. And Gigi came in, and it's the best scene in the book where Gigi comes in. She acknowledges the presence of the physicians in the room, and she was expecting me to be stable. They said she's stable, but we have to have, surgery, and we need a plan, and we need you to come. And so she did. And she saw I was nothing but a breathing body in the bed. Yeah. That's how she describes me.
Oh, my God, that must have been horrifying for her.
A breathing body in the bed. It was. And she said there was nothing other to do than to lift up the sheet, get in bed with me, wrap her arms around, start rocking her baby, just rocking her baby. And she was weeping, but I didn't know she was weeping. And I'm going, oh, this is nice. This is nice. Oh, this is what a Gigi is. It's like, I have no idea. And people say, how did you know to do that? And she said, there was nothing else to do. She was an infant. What do you do with your baby who is in distress? And that's where we began, was right at the beginning. I'm the one who's taking responsibility for helping you. And after she stayed with me 2.5 weeks after the stroke happened, I had to have a craniotomy. They removed a blood clot the size of a golf ball. The physician said, we have no idea how much you will get back. And, it's your job now to go heal yourself. And I was very blessed that my coworkers donated time off with pay. So I didn't have to feel like I was going to starve to death.
But did you even understand what
beautiful.
A job was without the left hemisphere?
All I understood was that I was, all systems were devastated. All systems were devastated.
And did you have a feeling about that? Because as my meditation teacher says, you can't have a negative emotion about something until you have a thought about it. So if you couldn't think about it. Well,
that's not true.
Oh, okay.
You can eat. We are feeling creatures who think.
Right.
We are feeling creatures who think. All the information streaming in from the external world coming in through our cranial nerves and sensory systems goes directly into the limbic system.
Right.
Whether we have a thought about it or not.
So you can feel fear and you can feel danger even though.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And not know why.
Right.
I mean, I can be walking in a dark garage at night and see something, say, one need to take the elevator up to my thing and see a warm body in there and just have an overall sense of knowingness of that's danger, don't go in there without having the thought. So we are, it's true, thoughts stimulate emotions, stimulate a behavioral physiological response, but we don't have to have the thought.
Well, and a lot of it's also so deeply wired in there because they've done studies with mice, which I can't stand animal studies, but, you know, if they subjected the mouse to the smell and the electrical shock, yes, all you had to do is have the smell and the animal would react, but also the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, when they got exposed to that smell, would react as if they were getting an electrical shock. So we have a lot going on in our nervous system that is connected to that reptilian brain.
Yeah. And smell is different. Smell is the only sense that doesn't go through the thalamus. Mm. So the thalamus is like information comes in and it goes to the thalamus, and then the thalamus is going to figure out, okay, where's the next step? Olfactory sense of smell goes directly into the limbic tissue. And it does that for two reasons. One, I have to procreate. I have to be able to find a mate. And I do that with my nose. And second, I have to save my life, but I have to eat, and I have to be able to tell if that food has poison or not. So so smell is a little different than the others, but you don't have to have the thinking. I mean, if you look at other mammals that don't have the higher thinking cortex, they still have reactionary behavioral patterns that happen at the level of the limbic system. Now, the thinking tissue on top is designed to regulate and modulate what's going on below. And it's supposed to, what's going on below in the limbic emotional is designed to inform what is going on in the tissue above. So they end up with this very intimate relationship, which is, as humans, we end up with these two very emotional different groups of cells doing very different things based on very different values. And then two thinking groups of cells that also have very different values based on the tissue below.
So the insights that you gained from this experience, which you so beautifully captured in Whole Brain Living, you actually describe, I love this, the four main characters, two in our right brain, two in our left brain. Would you share for our audience what those characters are up to and why it's so important to learn the brain huddle?
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, I call this whole brain living because as we started out, you know, one quarter of our brain, the world declares, the scientific community declares, as conscious. And then our emotional selves, and there happens to be emotion in the left hemisphere as well as in the right hemisphere, that's part of the unconscious or subconscious. And then the right thinking tissue, well, the whole right hemisphere is part of the subconscious because it doesn't use language. It communicates in biological, physiological response, so which is its own form of language, but it's not verbal language, which we as a society value so much. So as we look at the anatomy of the brain, we're going to have the reptilian brain, which is the brain stem and it's part of the thalamic system. These are on-off switches. I'm hungry, I eat. I'm not hungry anymore. I want a mate, I mate. I'm done with that. So great. It's nice to have that level of simplicity. But then new tissue gets added on top for the difference between a reptile and a mammal. And so the new tissue on top is the emotional or experiential tissue of our limbic system. And so all the information now is streaming in, and the first level of cortex that it's going to hit is these two amygdala. But we have two amygdala, not just one. And so we have two amygdala, which is alarm, alert, alarm, alarm, alert, alert. Do I feel safe? Because I'm a biological creature and I could be dead in an instant, right? So my awareness of threat and danger in the external world has to be constant and key. So we have this amygdala. Right next to that is the hippocampus. When the amygdala is calm, then the hippocampi turn on, one in each hemisphere, and then information can get hot to the higher level of the next level, which is the thinking tissue. And in the human, our cortex is approximately twice the thickness, double the thickness number of cells. So we've got other things going on than other mammals do. And but all mammals are different. And if you look at comparative anatomy, it's wonderful because we all share all these different parts and we all have different abilities. And wouldn't it be cool to have echolocation, right? But I don't have that because I don't have that wiring. But anyway,
what
so we end up with these. Oh, if you, bats, bats will echolocate. So if you throw a rock into the sky, all the bats will go after because they're sending out a sound. And then the sound bounces off of whatever's out there. And then they locate based on the echo of the sound of that reverberation. Don't we all wish we had that?
Yeah. And the eyes of a hawk. The older I get, I want to have those hawk eyes.
Exactly.
Read a newspaper three football fields away.
Exactly. Yeah, that prairie dog looks delicious. So, same kind of thing. So we end up with these two emotional groups of cells that are separate from one another. They don't share any cell bodies, but they do communicate with one another. And then over time, the thinking tissue has been added on. And so now we're in the phase as humans of working the kinks out between the tissue below of the emotional or experiential and the thinking tissue above. And so we humans, we're in the process of evolution. We have not completely evolved. And I truly believe that when we master whole brain living and we know of these four different parts of our brain and we bring them all into communication at a conscious level, this is our next level of evolution. So that's why it excites me so much. So back to your last question, though, of that was my motivation. If people knew that we had these different groups of cells, and we could get to know the character profiles that each of these skill sets ultimately feel inside of our body, that means each one of us has four very specific characters. And, you know, so even in any relationship of you and me, if there's four of me and four of you, there's eight of us in here that we have to navigate.
Well, as Katie likes to say, no two people have ever met each other. And that's part of the reason why is because we all have these characters inside of us that are all playing these roles. And if we can't understand them, and what I love about your book is that you explain it in terms of relationships, in terms of work, and in terms of addiction, in terms of all these different areas in such great detail.
Yeah. And I love the work of Byron Katie. I mean, she's just awesome. And what I love about the work is that the work, you know, is so easy to explain by way of the different parts of the brain. And she doesn't present it that way, but ultimately that's what she's doing. So what I bring to the conversation of neuroscience that is new, is I'm not bringing any new science to the conversation. What I'm bringing to the conversation is the experience of what we already know. We already know that the left thinking tissue is an analytical organizing. It loves to control people, places, things, time. It's punctual. It defines the boundaries of where we begin and end. You know, there's all those skill sets, but it's more than just skill sets. It's a personality profile. I'm a very different person when I go to I sit down and I do work than if I'm on the floor playing with my dog, right? My values are different, the way I hold my body and my voice and I interact. So what I bring to the conversation is each of these groups of cells actually manifests this very specific personality. And the conflict that we have is internally between these four different parts of who we are. And when we understand each of who these four parts of who we are, why they're driven to be the way that they are based on their value structure and what they're good at, and we learn to appreciate all four parts of who we are, even the parts that we might say we don't like or we'd like to get rid of, oh my gosh, without that part of our brain, we cannot learn and we cannot grow. And I don't know about you, but I want to be able to learn and I want to be able to heal myself, heal my pains, heal my conflict using the healthy parts of my brain that know how to love me. Oh my gosh, what a concept. We are capable of self-nurturing. So by getting to know these four different profiles inside of myself, I get to choose who and how I want to be in any moment. And to me, that is total personal freedom.
describe for our listeners quickly what the four personalities are, what their jobs are. And then I love the way you describe it as like a sports team, because it's true. Different people on a team have different strengths, and you don't want to just kick off a member of the team for one reason or another. You want the team to come together all right, to, you know, head in the same direction.
Yeah, exactly. So, everybody visualize in your left hemisphere, what does it value? First of all, the left hemisphere has linearity across time, and it values me, the individual. So the left thinking tissue of that higher cortex, left thinking tissue, this is the part of me that is very analytical. Thank goodness. 1 + 1 = 2. For most of us, there's no emotion in that. A is followed by B is followed by C. There's no emotion in there. It's simply data and the data processing.
So it's categories and judgment and concepts.
Concepts. It's going to define what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad. It's going to try to take me and fit me into the social norm of the external world. Okay, that's the job. And thank goodness we have that, right? This part goes to work. And it's our A-type personality, and it gets stuff done. And I encourage people to name the different parts of who you are. And I call that part of me, character one, left thinking, Helen. Hell on wheels, she gets it done. And she speaks us in a certain way. She holds my body in a certain way. She puts on my glasses. She puts on my earphones. She hangs out in the office. She hangs out on the computer for meetings. She's very predictable. She runs everything on a list. She's a great part of who I am. And I lost her completely. And I'll tell you, when she came back online, she wanted to take over my brain again. And the rest of me are going, we are so glad you're back. But no, we got a democracy going on in here, and we're going to vote for who's in charge.
And what was the visceral feeling sensation of going from being you call her a Helen character, that organizing, I call her the autocrat in my world. It's the one that is controlling and wants it her way. What's the sensation and experience of life and relationships and work not coming from that, but coming from a more whole brain experience of life?
Well, I feel peace. I feel peaceful because, you know, I was my agreement with myself when I didn't have that character. And this character number two, which is the left emotional of linearity across time. This is all the pain from my past. So any of the pain, any of the disappointments, any of the trauma, any of that was gone. And that was really nice. Now, I did miss Helen because, of course, Helen's functional and she's going to, you know, help me figure out how do I survive in the world. But my little character, too, I call her Abby, which is short for abandoned, because the minute I came flying out of my mother's womb, big trauma, right? We all experienced that. And so to me, that was kind of the original abandonment. So I call her Abby, little Abby, and I love little Abby. But little Abby is all my pain from my past. But I'm grateful for the pain from my past, because pain is nothing more than energy, whether it's an emotional pain or whether it's a physical pain. It's cells running in circuits, screaming, giving me the sense of pain. And what do? We get loud, we scream, we push it away, or we squash it down, we ignore it, we cut ourselves off from it. But no, pain is beautiful. It's just energy. And the next time you're feeling pain, just remember, it's just energy. And even if it's like you kick your toe, think about that excruciating scream of energy, but that's what it is. And then it dissipates very quickly.
So explain why pain is beautiful, because most people would not see it that way, especially right in the middle of it. And I know that it can be, because it's a catalyst for change.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a lot of energy all bound up there. So explain.
Exactly.
When you say it's beautiful.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's waving a flag. You're a biological creature made up of some 50 trillion beautiful cells that are all working together and communicating as one big organism. And so if you hurt yourself and you get a cut or you whack your toe and then boom, your system is so sophisticated that those cells, now you're having some tissue damage. And in the tissue damage, there's a breaking apart of the cells, and the cells then have particles that stimulate the pain nerves. And so pain gets sent to your brain and it says, hey, we got a problem down here. Well, isn't that a lot better than if you have no idea whatsoever that you got a problem and 3 weeks later you got to lose your leg because you got gangrene?
And there are biologically people who don't have pain and their lives are totally not functional because they're so vulnerable.
Oh, it's horrible. And they're absolutely 100% as a vulnerable creature. So the beauty of pain is it is your body's warning system. Same thing emotionally. So let's say something happens and I feel jealousy. You know, jealousy is just energy, but it's on a circuit that is real, again, waving the flag. What is going on? Now, I can just act on the jealousy and be completely unconscious about that and just have live my life as a jealous person. Or I can actually look at that and say, what is this about? Why do I feel threatened by this scenario? Where does that circuit come from? Can I identify in my past? So the pain is what I'm saying is the big wave of the flag of this needs some attention. These cells are screaming for a pattern response that says danger. And I need to then go back and explore and see that maybe in, 20 years ago, this happened and now this smells the same to me, right? It sounds the same. It looks the same. It seems the same. And it's going to get the same response. But it's like, but that's 20 years ago. And do I have the capacity to really explore this in a healthy way in order to find my way through that toward a greater level of health?
I often describe people as being an iPhone 14 operating on iPhone 4 technology. So, I mean, truly, the trick is just getting the upgrade and reprogramming the brain so that it's operating in present day with present day tools rather than, and as you said,
exactly.
Just being born on planet Earth. And I love Stanislav Grof's work because he did holotropic breath work with 35,000 people. And truly, all of us have some birth trauma. I mean, holy cow.
Yeah.
Being born is really traumatic.
Oh my God. It's traumatic. Oh my God. It's huge. It's a massive
physiological. So we all have a little Abby in our body somewhere going, life can be dangerous.
Right.
So you've got character number one, which is the categorization, I've got a schedule. Yep. I've got to be somewhere at a certain time. I've got to accomplish certain things. And then you've got little Abby who's also in the left hemisphere going, wait a minute, danger. I experience something is going on, that alarm bells are going off.
Yep.
And then there we've got the whole blissful right side of your brain. Well, what's that going on there?
So the limbic tissue then in the right hemisphere, first of all, right hemisphere is right here, right now, whether it's the emotional tissue or the thinking tissue that stems from that. So character three, I call it character three, is the right emotional tissue, which is experiential. It's all right here, right now. And it's not about me, the individual, because I exist over there in that other hemisphere. So this, if I'm just here in the present moment, and I'm not about the right, wrong, good, bad, and I'm not in the box of my own pain from the past, but I'm really just right here. Well, I'm curious. And in that curiosity, I'm exploring something new. And as I explore something new, I become creative. I become innovative. I tend to be pretty friendly in the present moment because why wouldn't I be? And so there's this innate joyfulness and also a childlike nature, not childish, which is kind of more that character two, little Abby, when she doesn't get her way. But character three is just doesn't care what the way is. It's just there and happy. And it's kind of likes to be with others. So it's very, I've never used this verb, but it's kind of adverb. It's kind of millennial. It's collective.
I was just going to say, you do this wonderful job of describing humanity in America over the years by what each generation was dealing with and which of these sections were firing and wiring the most for these people. And again, it's like a team
that needs to get along and understand what who is bringing to the, you know, which element people are bringing to the table, because we are all of these things.
We're all of it. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's this really joyful, playful part of who we are that is designed. This is really where our genius is, because first of all, it has an impetus toward. It's an action. It's experiential. It's receiving and it's responding to the experience at an emotional, physiological level. So as I dive into the water in the present moment, it's the part that feels the pressure against my body. It feels the temperature. It feels wet. And in that, there's this celebration of, oh my God, I'm alive. And it's exciting and it's interesting. And I want to share that with you, because let's go explore. Let's just blow time. Time is gone because it's off in the left hemisphere somewhere. So let's go get lost in the flow. Let's go do some art. Let's go get lost in the time of excitement, whatever it is we're doing. And whatever we're doing is good. Now, that's not to say that this part of ourselves has any consequences of behavior. Because it doesn't, right? Consequences of behavior is in that right, is in that left hemisphere. So, you know, if you do something and it's kind of like, you know, someone says, well, what were you thinking? And it's like, well, clearly I wasn't, you know, it's like, well, you know, okay, I get it. So, and then the right thinking tissue is not action toward or really stimulation of. In that collective consciousness is the stillness of knowing that I am this magnificent life force on this magnificent planet in this time. And what is, and I'm good with whatever is. And that means in this moment, an immense sense of gratitude that I'm alive, that you're alive, that we, oh my gosh, have all these tools. Helen has this language for me to use. Abby has these emotions for me to experience. That whole left hemisphere has me, the individual. Oh my gosh, I'm an individual. I'm not just a big energetic blob of 50 trillion cells like a bunch of amoebas floating in the ocean. Oh my gosh, I'm a human being. And there's just this awareness and awe, and it feels like love. And it's, to me, that was the greatest gift of the stroke, was I lost characters 1 and 2, boom, they were totally offline. Character 3 was wiped out because I was a lump of lead in the bed. I had no energy. I was completely not capable of any effort. And that left me sitting in a state of this beautiful, what I call Queen Toad, queen, because she's a queen of the universe, and Toad because she's a little goofy.
And I think this is a story that we've heard so many times of people who have crawled up the ladder of success and they've gotten really rigid and, you know, yeah, they've got the schedule down, they've got the performance down, they've got this, but they're inside, they're just empty shells. And they've lost that playful, in the moment, character 3 that you just described, which, I mean, that's part of the essence of a successful life is the balance between all these things. So that's the treasure of what your book is describing. So continue with the rest of the right brain and what's going on with 3 and 4 there.
So here we have these, and just in conjunction with what you said, if you've got this really strong character 1, character 2, which views the other parts of who you are or the other parts of others who are around you with contempt or disrespect, then you might want to check out your own little character 2 and see what's actually going on. What happened along the way that caused you to shut down your playful, joyful? And if your character 1 thinks your character 3 is doing nothing but wasting time, then you're not going to gain the benefits. And the physiological system of our stress is character 1 and character 2. And it is in that judgment of right, wrong, good, bad, and pushing the calendar and pushing the clock and just pushing, push, push, push. But the biological creature is not a machine that you plug into the wall, you turn it on, and you leave it on forever. The biological creature requires a push and a pause. It's cycle.
There's this wonderful
push.
Yeah. There's this wonderful cartoon of people coming to people who lived primitively and
bringing them a computer and saying, here, we bring you technology. And then they, the next screen is, we'll be back next year with antidepressants.
Exactly. Exactly. The biological system is not designed, first of all, to function with minimal sleep. So let's just touch on that, because you, when you ask me what, how did my mother set me up for success? That's what my mother did. My mother believed, as an educated person and as the mother of a person with schizophrenia, and as my mother, the mother of, you know, she called me her Harvard doctor daughter, all brain, 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 brain. Brain was a big subject in our daily conversation. And my mother believed that my brain knew better than anything, any person outside of my brain, what it needed in order to recover. So she said, she set me up and she followed my natural rhythm. And my natural rhythm meant 12 hours of sleep. And if I wanted to sleep for 12 hours, she let me sleep for 12 hours. And then when I woke up, she was there to tend to me. She took me to the bathroom. She gave me food. I eventually, after a few weeks, shifted to a 6-hour cycle. And so during those, any moments that I was awake and alert, we went to school. I mean, she had to teach me what a color was. You know, she had to teach me how to see color because my brain couldn't identify and differentiate color anymore. So sleep to me is a critical time, because it's when, I mean, if you push, your little cells, and your little cells are little creatures, and they eat, they create waste, they're pooping. And if you, when you sleep, the garbage cleaners come in and clean up the waste.
Yeah, it's the glymphatic system. We've known about the lymphatic system forever, but the glymphatic system has to get rid of 1/4 ounce of toxic material every night. And if you don't get that sleep, you aren't getting rid of that toxin.
Yeah, you've got to. Otherwise, you wake up, you feel foggy. You know, and so anyway, so sleep is so important, and what we eat, you know, sugar and caffeine really are potentially destructive chemicals if we're not paying attention to what we're doing with them.
Yeah, if your blood sugar is going like this all the time, it's really hard to feel good.
That's a really nice way of putting it. But yeah, no, it is. And if it's going like this, then you're balancing, you're bringing in the caffeine to counter when your sugar's low. And it's not about caffeine at all. It's about your sugar.
And when your A1C starts cranking up there, then it's just so harmful on the nerves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you feel anxiety. I mean, biology, we're just a biological entity. So everything we're bringing in is going to have an influence. So anyway, so we end up with these four characters, the Helen, the analytical, the Abby, the pain from the past and projection into the future, I call her Pigpen, my little character three, playful, joyful, curious. And then the character four, Queen Toad, just sitting in the, you know, court of gratitude that I exist at all. And wow, what a wonder life is. And when you exist as that level of awe, everything changes in your life, which is why we, you know, people are trained in how to be compassionate. Beings, because in compassion, it's actually the byproduct of the awe. So just the sense of gratitude brings us a compassion and an empathy for others. But so it's one thing to be able to differentiate these four parts of who we are, but the magic happens when they really get to know one another. You really know these four parts of who you are, and then they get in conversation and start their own negotiation. So let's say today it's Friday. It's the first day in about, I don't know, 2 months in Indiana. The sun is shining and my little pig pen is going, oh my God, I want to go play. You know, I just want to walk in the woods with my dog and I want to make a mess and I want to just do whatever I want to do. It's like, oh my gosh, there's sunshine. And Helen's over here going, Jill, you have two podcast conversations you have to have today. So what we're going to do is we're going to work in the office before, and then we're going to come down and we're going to have do our work. And then you can have the whole evening. But it's this real, very realistic conversation. And because Pigpen knows she's going to get her time, and it's not like, okay, I'm going to work and 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 the sun's going to set. You know, I don't get any of that because we have a negotiation, right? We have an agreement. And so every moment becomes this conversation. So, you want me to run through the brain huddle real quick?
Yes, please. I was just actually thinking about that. And yeah. Yes, I mean, it feels so good when you can actually make friends with the members of the team, appreciate their roles. And then all of a sudden, the experience of life is completely different.
Yeah, completely different. And on behalf of Little Character 2, I do want to say this. We exist as biological creatures in the present moment. I mean, really, stop and think about it. This is where we are. This is where we live. The mere concept that there are cells inside of our Little Character 2 portion of our brain that has the capacity to bring information about the present moment and step out of the consciousness of the present moment. Well, if bliss and euphoria is right here, right now in the present moment, and Little Character 2 is willing to step out of the present moment to look at our past experience to see if there's any reason for alarm alert, danger, threat, potential. I mean, look at what it gives up in order for us to have that wisdom. So there's this in-depth wisdom of our past experience because of that Little Character 2 pain. So that's how I bring love to that part of who I am, because so many people say, how on earth do I love my little Abby? And it's because that little Abby protects you moment by moment and has sacrificed her own joy in order for you to be able to be safe. She's self-preservation. And if we didn't have self-preservation, we'd be made, you know, every new threat, we wouldn't know it was a threat, and we'd be eaten by the lions and tigers on a regular basis. So all parts bring this very important communication. So brain huddle is what this conversation is what I call. And brain is the acronym. So B stands for breath. Why breath? It's in the present moment. You cannot breathe in the past. You cannot breathe in the future. You breathe right here, right now. So that's how you bring your mind to the present moment. Breath. Focus on it. It's a train running down the present moment track. You can increase its amplitude. You can increase its frequency. You can play with your breath, do whatever you need to get your mind into the present moment. So B stands for breath. R is recognize which of the four characters called this brain huddle. And I encourage people to practice having all four characters calling the brain huddle, because you really need the huddle when Little Character 2 comes online. And if Little Character 2 is now full of worry, full of pain, full of screaming, full of rage, full of self-loathing, full of sadness, full of whatever, she doesn't want it. It's delicious. Let's admit it. Character 2 is delicious, and we don't want to let go of it. But and every now and again, I let her do her thing, right? But when it's appropriate, and when the rest of me are still there holding the space for her. But she feels alone, and she feels, you feel all these negative emotions because we feel alone. We have cut ourselves off from our characters 3 and our character 4, which, you know, we're connected to the universe. Oh my gosh. And it's in those moments when we should be most self-loving, because this little character was willing to step out of the present moment to save our lives. And it's like, anyway, so.
And that character gets a lot more manageable when she's heard and seen, or he is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, usually it just wants to be hugged and held by our own character 4. It might want character 1 to come in and just fix it. Just fix it. And character 1 might say, okay, you know, every time you are in relationship with this person, for me, it was always my brother. The more time you spend with your brother, it goes downhill very quickly, that you guys know how to push each other's little character 2 buttons, and it gets ugly. So we're going to put you on the phone and put a distance between you and see if that helps, right? But it's like healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. Healthy mm-hmm. boundaries for our little character 2 is a gift that we give to our little character 2. And character 1 can take care of that. And so B, breath, bring your mind to the present moment. R, recognize which of the four characters called the huddle. A, appreciate regardless, there's 4 of us in here. I am never alone. I mean, first of all, isn't that lovely? I am never alone. There's always 4 of me in here. I, inquire. Well, who do I want to be in this moment? Well, right now I'm kind of this cross between Pigpen, because the sun's shining, and Helen, because I'm sitting here, right? But it's like, inquire. Okay, Helen's going to win the show. And then N is navigate moment by moment. Because if all of a sudden my house started to shake as in an earthquake, it's like, love you, darling, but I got to go. And then I would, you know, I would navigate my present moment reality. And this kind of intra-communication within oneself allows us to completely heal any of our pain, love ourselves regardless of what life brings us, and allow us to blossom as these magnificent creatures that we are in the world.
And I love how you said that the outcome of that is peace, because I find when I'm working with people that that is a profound outcome to the work and something a lot of us don't for much of our lives feel on a deep level. I used to feel like I was hanging on to the side of an iceberg. And, you know, when the problem is buried in the subconscious mind, it really is rather challenging to get
right
to. So, so the acronym is
BRAIN, breath, bring your mind to the present moment. R, recognize who called the brain huddle. Mm-hmm. And practice different ones calling the brain huddle. R, A, regardless who called the huddle, appreciate the fact there's four mm-hmm. of us. I, inquire, who do I want to be now? Who do I want to give the microphone to? You know, who's the quarterback now? And N, navigate. Navigate moment by moment by moment with all four of us right here.
Fabulous. Dr. Jill,
it's a beautiful way.
What other
it's a beautiful way to live.
Can people
life
plug into? I know there's your fabulous book, Whole Brain Living, which I love. I can't wait to read My Stroke of Insight because I really want to hear how you moved through this amazing journey. What other do you have a newsletter? What other social media outlets would you like people to connect to you on?
You can connect to me through drjilltaylor.com. But everything is shifting right now because Whole Brain Living's been out in the world for 2 years now. And so I'll be working on a certification in Whole Brain Living that I'm hoping to bring later in the summer. I do a deep dive of a 5-hour dive of it's 4 meetings, 75 minutes a night a week for a deeper dive into whole brain living. I'm working on 2 manuals, one for the use of whole brain living for the certification programming and just for people who want to dive deeper. But I'm also bringing it as an awareness for the psychedelic journey because, you know, that's taken in the world like a storm. And for a very few people, it's a good idea, in my opinion. But for most of us, I just want people to really know that the psychedelic results in neuroplasticity and neurogenesis, which is the brain's response to trauma. So if you're going to do that, do it and get what you need quickly with minimal amount of exposure to your brain. So that's kind of what my focus has been on. And we're also running programming in schools. If anybody wants more information, I'm easy to write me. I'll write you back. Dr. Jill at drjilltaylor.com. I'm very friendly.
Fantastic. Dr. Jill, thank you so much for joining us on Next Level Healing. Folks, if you got value, click like and subscribe, and we will see you on the next episode of Next Level Healing. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Next Level Healing. Please like, subscribe, and let us know how this helped you. How can it be even more life-changing? We love hearing from you. And if you're eager to upgrade your life, click the button here or go to consulttara.com and get your free customized GPS map. Get the coordinates for where you are now and where you want to go. Clients consistently report it's faster and easier than they thought possible. Remember, you were meant for more, and it is available to you. See you right here next week for our next episode.